Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, September 17th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, fire updates on the Dillon, Blue, and Log fires, mobile home rent strike freeze gains Fortuna Council support, Fall Matsutake commercial mushroom harvest opened September 15th in Shasta Trinity Forest. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
An update on the Dillon, Blue, and Log fires. The Dillon fire is currently 11,929 acres and 84% contained, with 639 personnel on scene. Crews are currently strengthening fire lines as hot, dry weather has continued throughout the week. KMUD News spoke with Sarah Dinos, Public Information Officer for the Dillon, Blue, and Log fires, for more information.
The main focus for the efforts right now, the fire has shifted to suppression repair. Fire crews have been strengthening control lines every day. One method they use for strengthening the control lines is cutting and thinning of brush and small diameter trees and limbs for larger trees. The material generated by cutting is chipped using chipping machines. This action helps reduce the density of flammable fuels, thereby reducing fire behavior should the fire move into the area. The containment lines on the eastern edge of the fire are holding well while crews continue with mop-up, patrol of the area, and backhaul of equipment out of the Carter Creek area. The same holds true with the south-southwest portion of the fire. The area's weather is expected to moderate some later this week, and there is a slight chance of precipitation beginning Thursday, depending on the storm track of Tropical Depression Mario.
There are no longer evacuation orders in place for the Dillon fire, though you can find evacuation warning information at protect.genesys.com. That's protect.genasys.com. And now updates on the Blue and Log fires. The Blue fire is currently 3,678 acres and at 31% containment with 481 personnel on scene. The Log fire is currently 1,170 acres and at 71% containment. The Log fire currently has no personnel on scene and is being monitored by air operations. Here's Dina with more on the Blue and Log fires.
So for the Blue fire, crews are continuing to make solid progress. Containment lines are holding well. The crews on the south end of the fire worked along an indirect dozer line, cleaning hazardous trees and getting ready for suppression repair to restore the area after the fire. The crews are also, they worked yesterday on unwrapping a protected piece of California history. They were unwrapping the Lake Mountain Lookout. This lookout is located on the southeast edge of the fire at an elevation of 6,700 feet within the Klamath Forest, and is the last surviving rock tower with a cab in California. It's been in continuous operation since the early 1900s and remains a vital part of wildfire detection network across the Klamath Range. For also happening to the north, just below Syed Valley, firefighters built an indirect hand line into Guard Creek. They are installing hose lines along it, and the work should be finished shortly. Crews will use controlled fire today on the north to strengthen the containment lines. So there is a possibility that people could see smoke.
There are currently evacuation warnings in place for the Blue and Log fires, which can be found on protect.genesys.com. KMUD News will continue to bring updates on fires during this 2025 fire season. Fortuna is considering mobile home rent control and has approved a temporary freeze on rent increases as the City Council studies its options. Daniel Mintz reports.
Balancing the demands of mobile homeowners against litigation risk, a majority of the Fortuna City Council supports freezing mobile home park rent increases until definitive action is decided. Residents of Fortuna's Royal Crest Mobile Home Estates have described rent increases for their spaces as unfair and are lobbying for adoption of a mobile home park rent control ordinance. A study session at the Council's September 15th meeting explored various options for rent stabilization, including a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, written agreement, and a mobile home rent control ordinance. Both would tie rent increases to the Consumer Price Index, CPI, inflation rate, but unlike an ordinance, the MOU wouldn't be legally binding. City Manager Amy Nilsson presented research on Royal Crest's annual mobile home space rent hikes, which have consistently exceeded the CPI of the San Francisco Bay Area. The Orangevale-based stores management company operates Royal Crest, and in a letter to the city, its attorney said the city should take into account the park's expenses relative to CPI. He advised against adopting an ordinance, saying it leaves the city vulnerable to litigation if rent increases don't allow park owners to get a fair return on investment. Wary of facing litigation as the city deals with budget shortfalls, council members leaned toward pursuing an MOU. But during a public comment period, numerous speakers described the impacts of Royal Crest rent hikes, and this representative of the Humboldt Tenants Union said anything but rent control will result in a political and legal fight.
The MOU lacks any teeth, and in this instance, doing the right thing requires having a spine. If any of you vote in support of the four options besides rent stabilization, my organization and I will fight shoulder to shoulder with the tenants to prevent eviction, and we will campaign against your reelection. You can expect litigation either way. Humboldt Tenants Union has passionate legal representation, and we are here ready and willing to do all that is necessary to ensure that tenants are protected and to allow them to keep their homes. We would like to speak with the residents of the Royal Crest to discuss ways to fight back.
The council's support for an MOU cooled following the public commentary. Council member Tammy Trent said an effective approach is necessary.
We do need to do something because rent is almost as much as it costs to rent an apartment. So this is hard. I feel bad for the seniors going through this because when most of them moved into this, it was affordable housing. They put their life savings into their mobile home, and now they can't even afford to live in their mobile home. And so I can see the frustration.
Trent and most other council members favored a rent hike freeze, which would temporarily address the situation and allow time to get further legal advice before taking definitive action. But Councilmember Abe Stevens has doubts about the rent control approach for financial reasons and said something collaborative should be tried first.
You know, obviously the seniors are in a really precarious situation, and I'm super sympathetic to that, but also just, you know, sounds like it's going to take a lot of staff time and money to kind of enact something like this, which the city is critically short of, you know, and we kind of also need to balance that with other city objectives like public safety, wellness, and youth opportunities, and just, you know, everything else that goes into running a city to provide a good quality of life for everyone. And I think if the management company is offering to come up with some sort of, you know, understanding or agreement, I would be reluctant to take any action until we've at least given them the benefit of the doubt to make a good faith effort to come forward with some sort of proposal.
A motion to direct staff to develop a rent increase moratorium and analysis of the situation's legal implications was approved in a 4-1 vote, with Stevens dissenting. After the vote, he said he'd propose adding analysis of the MOU option during a future meeting's agenda request segment. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On September 15th, fall Matsutake mushroom harvest opened for commercial use permit holders in Shasta Trinity Forest. Personal use permits are not available for the fall season. Being in possession of or picking Matsutake mushrooms from National Forest lands is illegal and may lead to citation without a valid permit. Permit holders must be at least 18 years of age, have a valid ID, fill out the harvest log, and keep track of dates picking occurs and pounds harvested. KMUD News spoke with Lauren Yerkes, a front desk manager at Mount Shasta Ranger Station, for more information about this fall mushroom harvest.
Well, a person would need to have to be 18 years old, and they would need to come and get a permit. We issue timber product permits from the Forest Service, and they are so that somebody could harvest mushrooms and then sell them. If they don't have a commercial permit, then it's incidental use, personal use. But Matsutake mushrooms are just too valuable, so they are always a commercial mushroom. You have to have a permit to collect the Matsutakes. There's a map, so they have to follow the map and stay on federal land that allows for the harvest. A person has to have a permit, and the minimum is 4 days, and it allows a person 5 pounds a day to collect up to 20 pounds. There are also 30-day consecutive day permits, and they're good for 100 pounds. They cost $100. And then we also sell a seasonal permit, and it's good for the whole entire season, but they are limited to 200 pounds, and it is $200.
The fall Matsutake mushroom harvest runs to November 30th. The next mushroom harvest after this fall will be in the spring, when harvesters can find morels and Belides mushrooms, also known as King Belides.
Yes, we also have spring mushroom season, and the mushroom popular mushrooms that at that time are morels and Belides. And there's also other edible mushrooms I'm not real familiar with, but springtime, there's a little bit more opportunity for incidental use, personal use, up to 5 gallons in possession for the whole year, and a daily possession limit of 1 gallon. And if people want to sell them, then they would need to purchase a commercial mushroom permit in the springtime as well.
For this fall's Matsutake mushroom harvest, purchasing locations will be at the McLeod Ranger Station and at the Mount Shasta Ranger Station. Rangers advise to ensure the sustainability of the mushroom harvest to follow regulations outlined with commercial permits. Here's Yerkes with more information.
When people are out mushroom hunting, they need to be respectful of the land, not digging, not raking, use a knife to cut the mushrooms off at the root. Also, the public would really appreciate it if people would pack out their trash if they take it in.
For more information, the website is fs.usda.gov/r05/Shasta-Trinity. In state news, Garnet wildfire now 85% contained, protecting giant sequoia grove now priority. KPFA's Vic Bedoyan reports.
After nearly doubling in size last week, California's second largest active wildfire, the Garnet Fire, is now nearing full containment. Early concerns focused on whether the flames would damage hundreds of ancient sequoia trees. More than 2,000 firefighters remain on the scene working to strengthen containment lines. The fire has burned 59,844 acres and is 85% contained as of this morning. Officials say it is not expected to grow much beyond its current footprint. Operations Chief Don Fergilliam said the remaining active fire along the northwest edge and protecting the McKinley Grove of giant sequoias are now the main priorities.
Operationally, we have the most crews, the most engines. Not that we're forgetting about anywhere else on the fire, but we concentrate everything and we prioritize this north end of the fire. So to that end, we're still working in McKinley Grove. That work will continue for days, possibly weeks to come, to make sure that we save as many giant sequoias as we can that have been affected by the fire. And then the fire suppression repair out there is going to have to continue for some days to come.
Firefighters say the work isn't done until the flames are fully out, and significant post-fire cleanup and remediation will be needed to restore the forest from the damage caused by both the fire and the suppression efforts.
The big story of the next 24 to 48 hours is going to be that suppression repair. That's going to take weeks, possibly even a month or longer to get all that suppression repair work done. When we're out there suppressing the fire, we certainly we try not to run through sensitive features like meadows and things like that. But we do still, we go to work out there. And when you have this much iron, we always like to have a primary plan and a secondary plan and a third plan and sometimes even a fourth plan. So to that end, we have a lot of work to do out there to repair all that stuff.
In a briefing last night, Sierra Forest Supervisor Dean Gold says this is a critical time with a lot still going on as the fire continues. But the overall effort is shifting to suppression repair and securing containment lines.
There's a lot of resources that are not mission essential to the incident right now, and those are being demobilized. A lot of firefighting personnel. We're looking at different locations for camp consolidation and the movement that would take place with that. So all those moving pieces happening simultaneously.
Supervisor Gold commended the multi-agency collaboration of state and federal management teams who fought through extreme terrain and weather to keep the fire from spreading farther.
You will not, as a firefighter, you're not going to find more difficult, more challenging terrain. You won't. And in spite of that, They made every effort they could to shave every acre off that they could. The 3,000-plus firefighters that have been here, the numerous stakeholders, Sierra National Forest staff, and on and on. They have done a miraculous job of holding this fire to that best-case scenario.
Gold said the original expectation was for the Garnet Fire to burn 65,000 acres and called it a major accomplishment to keep the footprint smaller than that. He added that planning for extreme fire behavior has become one of the biggest challenges in the age of climate change. Forest Service fire models are struggling to keep pace with warming, drying forests, especially when combined with extreme weather. That was the case with the massive Creek Fire in 2020, and again with the devastating fires in Sequoia National Park a few years later. The same pattern repeated early on with the Garnet Fire, which spread several thousand acres in just a few hours after lightning struck the region, growing much faster than models had predicted.
We have certainly multiple instances now, multiple fires, some different locations, different behaviors, very different sizes, and yet we're seeing that the modeling that we have is not as accurate as we would like it to be. That's one of the biggest takeaways.
The incident management team reports that minimal fire activity was observed last night, and the fire remained within its designated footprint. Crews continue to patrol the area to identify and suppress hotspots or smoldering materials along the perimeter that could flare up in windy conditions. A warming trend is expected to continue through Wednesday, bringing higher temperatures and lower humidity. The extended forecast calls for increasing clouds and a chance of showers Thursday night. Meanwhile, resource advisors are working with firefighters to mitigate the impacts of suppression activities, critical work for stabilizing soil, protecting water quality, and preserving both cultural and natural resources. Vic Bedoyan reporting for Pacifica Evening News and KFCF Radio.
Protections increased for endangered southern resident orcas, Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Biologists believe there are only 73 endangered southern resident orca left, so advocates are encouraged by recent state-level efforts in Oregon to protect them. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission just approved three endangered species management plans to reduce threats to this population of iconic black and white whales, whose habitat ranges from Monterey up to Puget Sound in Washington State. Colin Reynolds is senior advisor for Northwest Programs with the nonprofit Defenders of Wildlife, which started petitioning for a state-level endangerment listing 2 years ago.
Over decades, a lot of really devoted scientists, government agencies, and others have really looked into the species and identify what's affecting the species. And a lot of those effects originate on land. So it does really take that all-of-the-above approach.
Southern resident orca feed almost exclusively on Chinook salmon, which are themselves endangered. Salmon are now starting to recover after the California Department of Fish and Wildlife removed four dams on the Klamath River in 2023 and 2024. The state is also moving on multiple fronts to combat pollution and climate change, which is blamed for rising water temperatures that affect both salmon and whales. The Golden State will release a new general state wildlife action plan on October 1st. Reynolds says the orca are also harmed by noise from passing boats and ships.
Southern residents like to communicate to each other, and they also use their senses to sense where fish are. But that can kind of get drowned out when ships are in the area, the churning, the engine noise, propellers, things like that.
The federal government introduced a recovery plan for orca in 2008 and renewed the most recent five-year priority action plan in 2021. The southern resident orca are known to have their own dialects and culture with distinctions between pods. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, senators grill FBI Chief Patel over Charlie Kirk assassinations, FBI firings, handling of Epstein files, KPFA's Caitlin Clift reports.
FBI Director Kash Patel was grilled by lawmakers at Tuesday's Senate oversight hearing. Both Democratic and Republican senators expressed disappointment and outrage with Director Patel's responses, or lack thereof. Patel's first clash with the committee members focused on the FBI's handling of the investigation into last week's fatal shooting of conservative influencer Charlie Kirk. Patel had prematurely tweeted, quote, "The subject for the horrific shooting today that took the life of Charlie Kirk is now in custody." However, it was later determined that the individual had no connection to the shooting. But Patel defended his early announcement when questioned by Senator Peter Welch of Vermont.
Could I have been more careful in my verbiage and included an A subject instead of subject? Sure, in the heat of the moment, well, but I was doing the best I could.
You know, candor, I don't quite get that, because if we have our man, that would suggest to the public that everybody can rest and relax and not then continue to provide information to the local law enforcement and to you. Well, so that was a mistake.
I don't see it as a mistake.
Patel also defended the recent firings of highly ranked FBI officials, three of whom filed a lawsuit last week claiming they were illegally dismissed due to pressure by President Donald Trump. The lawsuit quotes Patel as having told one of the ousted agents, Brian Driscoll, that the FBI tried to put the president in jail and, quote, he hasn't forgotten it. Over the last several months, these firings have been seen as part of a broader political purge within the Bureau under Patel's leadership. FBI employees have reported being demoted, reassigned, told to retire, or subjected to polygraph exams that question their loyalty to Patel, who became FBI director in February. In response to the firings, Patel simply stated that no one at the FBI is terminated for case assignments alone. However, Illinois Senator Dick Durbin pointed out that not only are these highly ranked staff members being fired, but they are also being replaced with Trump loyalists.
According to former acting FBI Director Brian Driscoll, in a lawsuit filed last week, Director Patel made this very plain, telling Driscoll personally, quote, that his own job depended on the removal of agents who worked on the cases against the president, end quote. And even though he knew, quote, the nature of summary findings were likely illegal. At the same time, Director Patel has installed MAGA loyalists as political appointees in key career positions, including conspiracy theorist Dan Bongino as FBI Deputy Director, the first time in the history of the FBI that this position has not been held by a career FBI agent.
Cory Booker of New Jersey later got into a heated exchange with Patel when the FBI director evaded similar questions, to which Senator Booker strongly expressed his disappointment.
I believe you have made our country weaker and less safe. I believe that we are more vulnerable to a major event, and I pray to God it doesn't happen. You've gutted the Bureau of Institutional Knowledge and Expertise. You fired or pushed out seasoned FBI officials, many with more than 20 years of experience, and were working on cases that were critical. You've been purging thousands of serious law enforcement officials who spent their careers keeping us safe, only to lower hiring standards in order to find anyone to replace them. And shockingly, you admitted in this hearing to Senator Coons that it would take 14 years to fill the vacancies at your agency. Many are the result of your purge.
Epstein's name wasn't spared either. Both Democrats and Republicans questioned Patel about the Trump administration's handling of its files on the late pedophile. Patel responded by blaming former administrations, and more specifically, former Labor Secretary Alex Acosta.
Now, I know that there's a lot of talk about Epstein, and I'm here to testify that the original sin in the Epstein case was the way it was initially brought by Mr. Acosta back in 2006. The original case involved a very limited search warrant or set of search warrants and didn't take as much investigatory material it should have seized. If I were the FBI director then, it wouldn't have happened.
Patel also faced heated backlash from California Senator Adam Schiff. Schiff quoted an interview between the Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche and Epstein accomplice Ghislaine Maxwell, where the convicted sex trafficker mentioned a, quote, cast of characters serving in the cabinet and working for the federal administration. Schiff asked Patel for the names of these members and why Maxwell was transferred to a minimum security prison following her testimony, as well as who consulted on the latter decision. When Patel stated that the Bureau of Prisons decided that on their own, the following resulted.
You want the American people to believe that? Do you think they're stupid?
No. I think the American people believe the truth, that I'm not in the weeds on the everyday movements of inmates.
You're not in the weeds.
What I am doing is protecting this country, providing historic reform,
and combating the weaponization of intelligence by the likes of you. And we have countlessly proven you to be a liar in Russiagate, in January 6th. You are the biggest fraud to ever sit in the United States Senate. You are a disgrace to this institution and an utter coward.
I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised that you continue to lie from your perch and put on a show so you can go raise money for your charade. You are a political buffoon at best.
Towards the end of the 4.5-hour long hearing, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas summed up the chaos.
You know, I have to say, it used to be that to see theater, you had to go to the Kennedy Center. Now, apparently, you need only go to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Reporting for KPFA News, I'm Caitlin Clift.
In National Native News, Brian Bull reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Hollywood legend Robert Redford has died at the age of 89. The longtime actor, producer, and activist passed away Tuesday in his Utah home. Among the many things Redford was known for over his career was championing the environment and indigenous rights. Vincent Schilling, a journalist and CEO of Schilling Media, says the late actor launched many Native careers.
It's no question that Mr. Robert Redford did a lot to help Native people. Look at the Sundance Institute. Native filmmakers, Native actors constantly have posted about the things through Sundance, and he just continued to fight the right fight.
Redford narrated the 1992 documentary Incident at Oglala, which investigated the 1975 murders of two FBI agents in South Dakota, and he was also an executive producer of the AMC mystery series Dark Winds. In the third season premiere, he made a cameo appearance as a jailbird playing chess with another prisoner, played by George R.R. Martin. Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn, played by Zahn McClarnon, watches on.
George, the whole world's waiting. Make a move.
Bishop to King's Rook 5.
Checkmate.
Thanks a lot.
Again, Vincent Schilling.
There is no mistaking what a hit Darkwind is, my gosh. Robert Redford really did quite a bit to enhance the legacy of not just himself as an actor, producer, and a filmmaker, but also the legacy of Native filmmakers and independent artists all over the world. He leaves behind a wonderful legacy.
Native artists, including Zahn McClarnon, Sterling Harjo, and Kiowa Gordon, have all paid tribute to Redford on social media. And South Dakota is a prime candidate for renewable energy developments like solar. However, one group wants to make sure that power and career potential reaches every corner of the state. SDPB's CJ Keene has more.
Pine Ridge-based Red Cloud Renewables has just welcomed its fourth wholly indigenous cohort into its pre-ARP, or Apprentice Readyship Program, for the year. After the program, participants are, quote, rooftop ready to install solar panels as a career. Alicia Hayden is the group's communication manager. She explains how the program works.
They learn basically everything there is to know about being a solar installer. They stay with you on campus, so we give them money to get here. We buy them a plane ticket to get here. We give them meals. We provide lodging. So everything is free for the individual. When they leave here, they're ready to enter the workforce.
There's more to it than just helping people find career paths, though.
Separately from our pre-op, we run a weatherization program, which allows us to have this whole cache of community members that we know are struggling with their energy bills. And so we select an applicant out of there, and then nearing the end of this, we take the class there to their home, and we actually get the class up on the roof and install these solar panels for them. And it's free to the homeowner as well.
Hayden says the projects actively lower the cost of energy bills for families in need.
Especially on this reservation, there's so much energy hardship, and there's so much sunshine, there's so much open space. When you drive through the reservation, you hardly see any trees, you hardly see anything blocking out the sun. When we install these panels, we see a huge decrease in energy bills on our side of things. There's no better place for a program like this.
This program is funded through grant dollars and public funds. In total, the group plans for 7 pre-ARP programs by the end of the year for 100 total trainees. Information for how to get involved can be found on the Red Cloud Renewables website. For National Native News, I'm CJ Keene in Rapid City.
And I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Vic Bedoyan, Suzanne Potter, Caitlin Clift, and Brian Bull. KMA News is online, and you can find us on KMA.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@KMA.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMA News is looking for stringer reporters in the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@KMA.org for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.